This is Paul Davey, Yield Point Specialist for Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Jamie Dickerman, along with Randy Conan. In studio, we'll have a report from Tyler Donaldson as well. NDSU's Wild World of Weeds Conference is at the Fargo Dome today, and Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson has this report from Fargo.
Here at the Wild World of Weeds in Fargo, speaking with Carrington Research Center Director Mike Osley. Mike, can you talk to me a little bit about what you presented here today? Anything that you'd like to highlight?
One thing that we're looking at in Carrington is the use of a seed destructor, which is a form of harvest weed seed control. The idea is to use your combine as your first line of defense for the next year's growing season to physically destroy the seeds that move through the machine. It's something that I think a lot of people won't gravitate to naturally, but unfortunately we're running out of options in a lot of areas where for some crops and in some areas the herbicide programs that we have are not providing adequate control at this point. And especially if you're no-till, having that mechanical method of weed control I think is becoming more and more important all the time. So the seed destructor is something that could be used. There's a few drawbacks, including a little bit extra horsepower use on the combine and maybe a little bit slower ground speed as a result of that. And it only captures the seeds that go in the chaff portion of the straw. So again, it's not a perfect option, but at some point people are running out of easier options to use.
So it sounds like a chemicalless option. Is this something for helping with the resistance issue or and other benefits?
Yeah, really the goal would be is if you have a high level of whether it's glyphosate resistance or if you have grasses that are group 1 or group 2 resistant, those would really be the targets of this technology. And it's proven to be highly effective at destroying these seeds, again, as long as they're going through your combine. If they fall off before harvest, obviously the seed control unit won't do anything for those. So for people with high levels of herbicide-resistant weeds, this is something that could be looked into.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
Much of Brazil will continue to see a mix of rain and sunshine over the next 2 weeks, with rain becoming less frequent and lighter in the last couple of days of January into the first week of February. World Weather Incorporated says the rains will be heavy enough to interrupt harvest, and drier weather is needed to reduce soybean quality concerns. Argentina will see regular rounds of rain and thunderstorms Wednesday through next week Tuesday, benefiting crops and soil moisture in some of the driest areas. January 29th through February 4th will be drier, and crop conditions will steadily deteriorate in southern Argentina, with daytime high temperatures climbing into the low to mid-90s and even some low 100s possible.
Trainers are going to be watching for winter crop damage following the past two mornings where temperatures dipped below zero as far south as the Texas Panhandle in western Oklahoma. Bitter cold weather occurring over the weekend and through the morning, with lows in the minus 20s and negative teens from the northern plains through northern Nebraska. Temperatures are expected to rebound to the teens and 20s in the north and 30s and 40s in the south.
It's been a very cold but mostly dry winter so far for most of the northern plains. This has not helped out the drought conditions, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
There is a pretty good-sized pocket of extreme drought, D3, in west central and southwestern North Dakota, and that does also extend through southern parts of the state. The clipper systems that we have seen this winter have not performed particularly well. There's been snow in the air quite a bit, but they haven't really produced a whole lot in the way of accumulations. A lot of that's just kind of blown away. And so we continue to see those drier than normal conditions in the west and the south part of North Dakota.
Rippey says looking ahead, he expects a much more active storm track with La Nina in the northern plains.
We are expecting, with La Nina in place, hopefully, as we move into late winter and spring, a more active storm track starting to develop in the northern United States. We really need to get some moisture into the soil before we get into the growing season, especially in the western part of the state and in the south. And that's a concern. Again, with La Nina, we do expect a more active northern storm track, but we might not realize the potential or the real moistening rain and snow until we get a little bit later into winter or spring. So I think we're a few weeks away from any significant relief.
President Trump suggesting last night that he may impose a 25% tariff on Canada and Mexico, two of the U.S. largest trading partners, by February 1st. While no official action was taken, Trump signing an executive order directing the Commerce and Treasury Departments to investigate the causes of U.S. trade deficits and review the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. The president of the Canadian Cattle Association, Nathan Finney, thinks this is definitely a step in the wrong direction.
Both sides of the border, we've really worked hard to try to harmonize our systems so that we are complementary to each other and have the free-flowing trade. So, yeah, we have everyday issues that we deal with. This is one that can be avoided to allow us to produce, you know, on both sides, the product that's desired globally and here at home, as well as, you know, the whole food security issue that we're running up against that we hear every day. You know, it's a step in the wrong direction.
Finney had a word of encouragement for cattle producers on both sides of the border.
We've worked on these files long before, you know, President Trump was elected, and we're going to continue to work on them, strengthening our position and trying to harmonize more closely. You know, we are friends, we are neighbors, and, you know, we have a lot of relationships on the producer side on both sides of the border that work well together and have worked well for years. And it could be in genetics, it could be in, you know, feeding, could be in packing capacity. And, you know, on both sides, we're in agreement that this is a step in the wrong direction. And, you know, we're going to continue to do everything we can possibly do to highlight the reasons why, you know, beef shouldn't be included.
In 2023, Canada and Mexico were top trading partners, with U.S. exports to Canada totaling $353.2 billion and $323.2 billion to Mexico, while imports reaching $421.1 billion and $475.6 billion, respectively. Go to the Red River Farm Network website, rrfn.com, to sign up for weekly FarmNet newsletter. You can also download this broadcast and follow us on Facebook. It's all at rrfn.com. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Tuesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Kleist Commodities analyst Brian Wagner says weather and Trump relief are supporting the grains.
Dollar weakness is probably behind it. Trump tariffs kind of not as strong or as immediate as everybody thought. And, you know, again, they're counting every raindrop in Argentina. So I think the market is in more of a buy the break mentality right now, but it's going to bounce back and forth because, you know, you got to continue to feed that bull.
The corn market is also bumping up against overhead resistance at $5.
Well, that's a big number. I mean, you know, we went to 90 and a half, you know, so we're somewhere between 490 and $5 is the upside. I'd say, you know, 480 is first support, but I mean, we could pull back to that 460, 65 area in March corn. So people got to take advantage of this run right now, book something.
Soybean harvest in Brazil remaining very slow. Soybean and corn advisor President Michael Cordonier says concern is starting to build.
Soybean harvest very slow, 1.7% compared to 6% last year. Mato Grosso even slower. They're at 1.4% harvested. Last year was 13. And this is the slowest harvest pace in Mato Grosso in like 15 years. Now, I did leave the Brazil estimate unchanged this week at 170 with a neutral bias. I think we need some more harvest data to decide should this number go higher or lower. And the range of estimates is like from maybe 166 million tons to maybe 173.
The chance of getting the second crop corn planted on time, it's dwindling.
Now, the Safrinha corn planting, only 0.3%. Last year was 5%. And I would guess right now that maybe 30 to 40% of the Safrinha corn is going to be planted after the ideal window. This is starting to be a concern, I think, in central Brazil. Now, it's a little bit drier this week in central Brazil, but more heavy rain coming again next week. So that's an ongoing concern, I think, in central Brazil.
Ever Ag market analyst Bryce Windecker says the corn market struggling with that $5 overhead resistance level.
It's going to be tough for this market to really go above $5 without another news story. Our ending stocks balance is now pegged at 1.5 billion bushels, so there's really not a whole lot of room for the market to absorb another story, whether it be more demand or less supply. from it to go higher, but I mean the weather in South America looks very favorable right now. So I mean that's really what it's going to take is some hiccup in production in South America for us to really, you know, have a chance of above going $5.
And while the cattle markets are lower today, Windecker says that market continues to be supported by good demand.
The American consumer continues to tell us that beef demand is pretty inelastic. I mean, you know, we were just discussing it this morning. You take a pork shoulder versus stew meat, and it's about a $6.50 per pound difference at the storefront, and consumers don't really seem to care still. It's pretty amazing.
North Dakota Senate and Finance Taxation Committee met today to discuss Senate Bill 2151, which would create a fund for repairing and replacing county and township bridges and funded by the state's Legacy Fund. Legislative Director, North Dakota Soybean Growers Association, Farrell Grossman, spoke in favor of the legislation.
According to the Upper Great Plains Transportation Industries October 2024 report to the North Dakota Legislative Assembly, the estimated bridge investment and maintenance needs for the county, township, and tribal bridges for 2024 through 2043 is $178.9 million. According to the report, most of the improvement needs are determined by the study's improvement model to be backlog needs and occur during the first study biennium. You're all aware of the NDSU study indicating a $30.8 billion agriculture economic contribution in North Dakota.
Director of Public Policy for the Farm Bureau, Pete Hannabit, talked about the need for bridges to be upgraded throughout the state.
Fortunately, much of our rural infrastructure was put in certainly under different weight limits than what we deal with now. Roads and bridges that were built for, you know, whatever tonnage pre-1970s are just not up to standards now. And so we have a specific policy about upgrading those standards. We also, obviously, everybody has a great interest in our tax and spend problems in this state and how we solve that. I see this as fitting into that as a piece of the puzzle or a part of the mosaic, however you want to say it.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. President Donald Trump signed an executive order declaring a national energy emergency yesterday. The order directed the EPA administrator, in consultation with the Secretary of Energy, to consider allowing the year-round sale of E15 gasoline if there are temporary gasoline shortages. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, responded by thanking the President for taking steps to address the potential fuel shortages. He also urged Congress to pass legislation that would permanently allow E15 year-round, saying it would provide long-term stability and eliminate the need for emergency waivers.
One of the hot topics of the off-season for wheat treatment is ethofumisate application. NDSU sugar beet agronomist Tom Peters says a lot of the discussions he's having with farmers and researchers is about making sure that etho activated in the soil is the right time.
But the real thing that always comes up about etho is getting it incorporated into the soil. Etho loves to be bound on soil, so talking about how rainfall affects incorporation into the soil is always an important conversation. And for growers, it's making a decision, should I leave it to Mother Nature and bank that rains in the forecast, or should I incorporate it myself using tillage?
Kochia is the bigger concern for Peters.
We don't really have very good tools, especially for controlling glyphosate-resistant kochia. So the one product that we've been working on is called Spinaid. So Spinaid is half of what we used to call Betamix. It's the part that works on kochia and common ragweed. So with Spinaid, there's three things you have to track. What are the size of the sugar beet? What are the size of kochia? And then what are the weather conditions today? The point of application.
Checking quotes right now. We're looking at Minneapolis wheat in March up 20 and a quarter, 603 and three quarters. July's up 19 and three quarters, 623 and a quarter. Chicago wheat March, we're up 21 and a half now at 560 and a quarter. Kansas City March up 26 at 574 and a half. Corn March, we're up a nickel now at 489 and a quarter. And March soybeans up 28 and a half, 1062 and a half. May up 27 and three quarters, 1072 and a half. February live cattle up 40 cents, 197.15. This is the Red River Farm Network.